All right. Yeah, actually, this thing is an alpha version of a talk. It might be the draft of our 2014 to-do list. It might be also just a draft to be discussed. However, after running some years of a wiki called bugplanet.info, which I created in the pre-Snowden area, and unfortunately it turned out to be totally true, so yeah, planet is like that, I thought I need to move on, and we gotta find ways to debug planet Earth. So I'm looking at this whole thing, I'm trying to structurally look at this whole thing. As I did when I created Bug Planet, I first of all collected like stuff on companies providing surveillance technologies, on countries and country-specific situations. So you'll find in bugplanet.info a wiki page for each country on this planet. So looking at worldwide SIGINT installations, actually this year I was a lot more busy than all the time before with adding entries, because with the Snowden stuff, there's a lot more on NSA programs and their structure and so on, but also on the cooperation models of intelligence agencies, as it looks like our enemies, so to say, those guys applying surveillance technology, being in the control freak mode, the assholes get along with each other quite well, as they have stuff to share and interest to share and so on. But also, I want to talk a little bit about the technology side of which stuff we must consider compromised at this point. So, if you look at it from a global point of view, so to say, we have this information at hand, and we have a process, or we have more information than actually find their way into the public understanding at the moment. I'm working for quite some time now with Spiegel and others to like get the material to a level of understanding. And if you look, for example, at the simplification processes, when we found material where the NSA, they do not break encryption, okay, but they're circumvented. They have ways to steal the keys, to limit the key links and so on. But journalists who are not aware of this whole area and to try to, oh yeah, we're gonna simplify it a little bit. And then the editorial process again thinks, oh, this is too complicated for our readers, let's simplify it. The message to the end user and the newspaper is then NSA breaks encryption, which is exactly the wrong message. But this is one of the problems we are facing, that we are in a level of complexity here where we need new ways to bring this into the public understanding, what we are talking about and what the problem is, and how to get out of this problematic situations here and there. So next to that type of problems, we have missing bits. Snowden comes from a department called S2 and below. That is those guys organizing technical data, thinking about ways to exploit other systems, thinking about crypto-circumvention, stealing data the one or the other way. However, this is all, most of the material is about technology. The material contains not so much about, let's say, the targets, because the targets are like individual cases, but the individual cases only find their way into the material if a special effort was required. So if not the standard way of, let's say, underwater cable tapping or having a compromised infrastructure in a country helped, but they needed to do something specifically. There is a department, if you look at the way the NSA works, there's a department above S2, it's called S1, it's called Customer Relations. Unfortunately, we don't have a lot of stuff about them at this moment, so we have an idea who the customers of the NSA are, like the White House, the State Department, the CIA, and so on, and how their liaison officers from the customers meet the liaison officers from the NSA, where this finds its way into a process called a request, and where that again finds its way to a process called tasking. Jake was explaining tasking earlier this day. This is actually, tasking is done by someone who understands the technical capabilities of the different programs and who manages to get the target's information out of the systems, or like initiates collections, initiates exploits, or whatever is required to get the data about the target. But then, all this type of technical data goes back to what's called the ROPI, the Requesting Office on Primary Interest, and they write reports, they write analytical reports. And here we come to Kubernetes interesting area, because it helps us also to understand why the NSA has a $50 billion budget, because there is people using that material in negotiations in what kind of things. So if a US delegation of the Department of Commerce or whatever maybe goes to Germany and they meet 5-10 people, they can submit that list of people to the NSA and say, get me all of them you had, and they get briefly reports about what these people like, what they don't like, what they think about the issues to be discussed, what their financial figures are, who their enemies are, who their friends are. And I discussed this type of usage of SIGINT with William Binney, the former architect of the NSA, who was here last year and became one of the very early whistleblowers. And he said, don't think black and white, okay? It's not that we have to use that information for blackmailing, because blackmailing is, you know, it's offending people, and, you know, they might find it abusive and so on. Think graymailing. It just works like this. You have this, all this information about a person, and you know what? You don't want to talk about this and that, right? And we don't want to talk about this and that, so why don't we agree to each other? So it's like more a gentleman's way of, yeah, not blackmailing, graymailing, which is an important procedure to understand if we ask ourselves, what the hell are they doing with all this data? Why are they doing this? And how does this also affect policy making, big business, and other things? So next to this, there's a lot more to learn how this data is being used, but this talk is not about how this data is being used. This talk is trying to get some ideas together what we can do against it. So there is this term of TSCM, of technical surveillance countermeasures, and within that terminology, there's a thing called a TSCM survey, which is defining or defined as service provided by qualified personnel to detect the presence of technical surveillance devices and hazards, identify technical security weaknesses that could aid in the conduct of a technical penetration of the surveys facility. So the facility in this case is planet Earth, but to simplify it a little bit and make it maybe manageable, I would hypothetically like to think of a country which maybe says, you know, we want to get out of this shit. We would like to provide our citizens an infrastructure for communication that is not pre-owned by default by the NSA and where the data does not, and so on and so on. So. If we think of a country who might, you know, want to move in that direction, there is a few steps required. My definition of TSCM is not the clinical one. So the clinical one is that TSCM just detects what the hell is around there, because it's the theory from the very old days where you went into a room and you would do a sweeping. You would look, where is the hidden bug under the table or whatever? You would remove that and you'd be fine. Things are unfortunately no more that easy. So communication security, operational security, I consider all parts of a successful TSCM approach if it should lead to something. Meaning, the scope of the problem is, okay, identify the points where the surveillance is, or the SIGINT takes place. Identify the technological problems of the framework, the technology you're dealing with, the parties involved, the supply technologies, and their jurisdictions, and all those related things. And then construct services, processes, and devices in a way where surveillance get nothing, except maybe encrypted data. Where network, software, process, architecture issues are being reconstructed in a way that data does not get easily into wrong hands by default, and where devices being used and processes being used by human beings are under the control of the user and or the process owner at least. So that's quite a high attitude of to achieve, but I guess it's what we want. The scope of the problem, however, if we come to that, is that transnational infrastructure must be considered compromised, at least by roughly three parties, so country A, country B, then you got the NSA, the GCHQ, and the Mossad as party number three, just if we simplify it and consider them one block. Many national infrastructures must even be considered double compromised because they are pre-owned often or operated by parties where the American, British, whatever players have access. And on top of it, there's the national intelligence who also has the idea of, you know, applying surveillance, getting the data and so on. So we're dealing with even more people. And then we have exploitation methods that are built into technology. That is what was released by the Spiegel this morning at 11 o'clock, where Jacob referred to slightly also built-in implants, which is their terminology for exploits plus something that remains in the devices in order to control it. So a lot of technology we use by default, be it Cisco, Juniper, Huawei, whatever, must be considered compromised and subject to computer network exploitation or tailored access operations, that's NSA terminology. And also, crypto circumvention tools are available on a scalable dimension, meaning that they collect so-called fingerprints of all our computer parameters, so operating system, browser, plugins, versions of those plugins, and so on, and have standard exploits at hand ready to inject into our TCP IP streams. And this is just a very rough picture. It's NSA puts this very rough picture in a bit more of a beautiful form. So I don't want to like analyze this here in front of you. You can do that at home, but you get rough the idea of, you know, cables connecting countries or continents, regional infrastructures of the collection services, cooperating operators of fiber optic networks within or cross country, plus implants, which makes the infrastructure of foreign countries and foreign network operators remote controllable for the NSA. The structure of the NSA programs is roughly like this. You can, in the hope that this is of interest for you, I spent a lot of time identifying the sub-programs of the different sections. So the sections are the script analysis guys, they collect handshakes and stuff. The global access guys, they go for the high fiber cables. The special collection sites, that's mostly the embassies. Special source operations is corporations with companies, telcos, carriers who run infrastructure. And tailored access operations is, you might call it hacking, but I don't call it hacking. I call it like, that's a military way of attacking computers and taking control over them. So because there's no hacker ethics involved, I don't call these guys hackers. These are assholes in governmental contract situations. So. All right, and then we have next to the, before we can come to straight technology specific solutions in these areas, we have to watch a bit of a principle, because again, let's put yourself, or let's put ourselves in the mind of a group who maybe advises a government of a country who says, we want to get out of this, okay? So what do we find next to these NSA-based operations and so on? We have problems of exclusivity of security. The NSA calls this the Nobos principle, no one but us. If we are looking, for example, at heavy military-grade encryption systems, which are capable of indeed providing security over in even insecure network environments, this technology tend to be not only expensive, but also subject to export controls. Because surveillance systems you can sell all over the planet, there's roughly no regulation in place yet, but if you come to encryption, this is considered as the ability of a country to protect itself from the global surveillance, so it's not available to all countries legally to be exported and so on. Also, signal intelligence, so the data being accessed through all these programs, is a currency. It's being exchanged between countries. If, for example, Ms. Merkel, the German chancellor, if this lady would, in theory, have the idea of, oh, we need to, you know, stop that the Americans access German data and so on, and we need to stop any cooperation with the NSA and so on, I guess she would find herself in the very difficult situation that if the Americans don't provide the German army and the German foreign intelligence data from their signal intelligence infrastructure, like imagery, satellite imagery of stuff happening in Afghanistan or elsewhere, she will have a few hundred dead German soldiers to handle, and a problem justifying that. So there is dependencies of countries in this exchange of SIGINT. And these dependencies are very different depending on the country and so on, but they need to be identified, because as long as we don't, let's say, integrate that in our concept, we stay pretty naive, okay? Because reality is not only what can be done technology, but also what are interests and what are trade-offs and what kind of deals are being made to ensure that national governments exist or whatever. By the way, that's the third point, and that's not so unimportant one, that also country-specific control freak structures, the so-called governments, they tend to be control freaks by nature, as they need to or have this idea of controlling not only a geographic territory, but also people living there and, you know, companies acting there and so on and so on, and borders and all these things that define a country. So we might, of course, even if, you know, it's a bit of a strange idea, but we might, of course, say, well, yes, okay, maybe a world is better with strong nation states than with one nation state that fucks all the others or screws all the others, or however you say it. However, governments tend to want to avoid third-party access, as they want to be, you know, exclusively. By the way, that also helps them to raise the value of their own SIGINT, because if the others have it already, then it's heavy, it's hard to trade it. Okay, but if you are like are able to establish a bit of exclusivity on your stuff, it's more worth. If we like that principle is another question, but maybe we can use it in some way. And also they want to ensure that they have their access themselves, and here it gets, here we run into a lot of problems, and I'll come to that. So let's say we have here our country X. We look at the interconnection stuff, we look at cross-country stuff, we might identify the companies acting here, their jurisdictional obligations, meaning if they are American companies, if they like it or not, they are obliged by law to allow NSA access to their stuff. And also their options clandestinely, so covertly, to do whatever with the infrastructure. We have to identify whatever exchange and cooperation agreements between the national intelligence guys and foreign intelligence are existent, because that's, as I said, very important. And we need to identify what kind of foreign embassy, so situations we have, as we learn that the United States National Security Agency indeed uses the embassy's locations quite intensely for, especially, of course, acting in unfriendly environments, but also in other countries. I'll come to that in a second. And then the targets, the implants, so whatever infrastructure there is in place, and not physically, but logically, so what part of our infrastructure in our country is already or might be subject to remote control, be it bot networks, be it our normal network of Cisco, whatever technology providing switching and so on. If we look at this first area of the cross-country installations, we have a lot of material already, thanks to Snowden, in our hand to identify the tabs, to possibly reconfigure routing, to think about bulk encryption for international traffic between specific points, and also building up alternative connections, circumventing those points where we know. That, by the way, started to happen, that like countries like Finland connecting their stuff not through Sweden and other areas. So this is unfortunately like a screenshot from a bloody television where Glenn Greenwald was browsing through some stuff. But this is just some of the operations of what is called FONSAT, so foreign satellite communications being collected. And we have more of those thingies. The other is, or the second point is reviewing third parties operating in the country, so identify who owns what companies, review network architecture to identify critical points, review of or identifying clean operators, so those who do not by default hand over their data. And there is, as usual for a nation state, if we are a country of a government of some country, there's a lot of options to put conditions into licensing. So to make, you know, the national routing or this or that. This stuff is already happening, but it often happens also on the just very selfish interest of countries who say, okay, we just play nobles as well, okay, we'll just say we get all the data of the citizens in our country, not the NSA by default, and if the NSA wants something, then we have something to trade. That's of course not what we want. So we gotta be careful about the ideas we're spreading and where they end up in national agendas. And you can shift at least, that's important, your critical service to operators where you suspect a better level of understanding of the problems and taking care of it. We have country-specific situations where normally this should have happened long ago. Like if you look at Greece, in Greece in 2006, there was a huge interception scandal on the prime minister, the most important ministers. It was a very technically complicated thing. There was a lawful interception system which was reprogrammed in a way that these ministers would be targeted to lawful interception measures which would not show up in the normal lawful interception systems, statistics and so on. It was all identified to be coming from Vodafone. There was the chief technician of Vodafone Security Greece found hanged, so a so-called suicide, which no one believes, and the police investigation indeed started after some years again. But the funny thing is that it went to the level that the Greek government understood that Vodafone is a problem for them. But what they did was not revoking their license, but just cashing in 150 million euro on compensation charge, and everything remained in service. So that was 2006. In 2013, we learn about the same company, that indeed they do have obligations to the British government, similar to those to the Americans. So not always it's enough that we know what companies is doing what. The idea of national governments then acting the right way also needs to be, they need to be instructed, obviously, or kind of like that. And then we have this situation of the cooperation agreements from national, local intelligence agencies with the NSA, where a review of the national capabilities and so on is of utter importance. In Germany especially, the situation is as fucked up as it can be, by the way. When Germany was still East and West, the East German government, the intelligence of the East German government, got hold of what is called the NSRL, that's the National SIG and Requirement List. That's one of the most secret documents of the NSA, listing all the targets in all the countries, like what they want on that government, what they want on that company, in that country, and so on, and so on. So they had that list, and they knew, the Americans knew that the East German intelligence had it. The authority keeping the records of the East German intelligence, headed by a guy called Gauck, turned over that material, that NSRL list, which is, by the way, the same list that identified later that Ms. Merkel is a target. They gave it back to the Americans without keeping a copy under police protection. And the head of that authority, keeping that records, later was not punished because he betrayed German interest over American interest. No, he became German's president. So that's the same guy being our president now. And when Snowden came up in late June, he said stuff like, oh, I don't have any sympathy for traitors. And then later, a month or a few days later, we had him, maybe we need to find out what happened, whatever. But at least he gave us an idea on his recyclability in the situation. Because, I mean, what do you want to do with a guy who's heading your country, who's obviously putting in U.S. interests over the interests of the country he's meant to be the president and take care of? I mean, you might be able to recycle that guy maybe as dog food or so, but I don't really get the idea what he can play for a helpful role in politics. So if we come to the areas where clandestinely, so covertly, embassies and similar offices, so also let's say foreign companies or in disguise of foreign companies' offices do stuff. We tried this in Germany and we spent quite some time with it. So looking what the hell are they doing and what can we find out? So to look at their installations, their areas, they target the persons like working in the embassies, their roles, their movements, their activities. I mean, if we are like the, think of to be a government of a national country, we obviously would have some options to look closer of whom are we dealing here. But also, of course, the next step would be then to target that kind of stuff. So using strong encryption, improving physical security, shielding and integrity of components and so on. So this sounds all pretty wild, but I think it's pretty important. This is the list of the SCS sites, so the Special Collection Service, and most of them are indeed in embassies. If you look at, for example, this is the rooftop of the US Embassy in Berlin. I mean, that's pretty obvious that this is not a wall right in the middle. And we looked at it with thermal imagery. We even identified the spots where the stuff is being like located and so on. However, 100 meters behind is the British Embassy. The British Embassy don't even cover it, okay? They just put a fucking huge SIGINT installation with a random on their embassy. So the Americans at least try to make it look a little bit nice. However, this is, unfortunately, in Germany is one of the stuff I made in the analytics for the Merkel situation. So they have one of these walls, which are not walls, on the bottom right corner with the red things in each, so northeast, west, south, in each direction. And their location is pretty good for getting GSM and other like wireless stuff and so on from the parliamentarian offices, from the parliament itself, from the most important hotels in the governmental district and stuff like that. There is, actually Duncan Campbell collects these embassy pictures. He has a lot more. I don't want to bore you with that. But if you're into nice pictures, he has a lot more. What we found and what was published just today is that also embassies play, so there's a Special Collection Service, plays a role in the active exploitation methods. So when they want to inject data packets, when they redirect internet traffic, when they want to corrupt or shoot down TCP/IP connections. What they need is the red and blue differentiation here is the actually the blue is high latency sites, so that's stuff being done abroad in the NSA facilities in Langley or wherever. And the red stuff is low latency, so that's local infrastructure. And in order to be able to do specific attacks on TCP/IP connections, they need low latency, so they need very fast reactions and very fast using of local infrastructure implants, which they control from a system connecting them in the embassy. So that's pretty funny, and makes it pretty necessary to look at the internet connections of the embassies or the fiber optic cables connecting them, or. Because this is almost cyber warfare. I mean, this is active attacks on connections. And I discussed this with some guys from, let's say, other governments, and they told me, yeah, you're right. But, you know, an embassy, you could, of course, think that just you build a huge Faraday cage and you build around it and you'll have a lot of problems less. But embassies tend to be buildings also not only connected, not only having an air interface, so to say, to whatever is around, but also having like electricity connection, which could be used and not used for stuff, telephone, internet, black fibers, water, drain pipe, plumbing. Plumbing might, you know, might make you think of your the system built up on the Congress, but plumbing has a total different meaning in this context, because if you look at the traveling of any US president, if he goes to any other country, he comes with his own chemical toilet. He will never shit in a normal hotel's plumbing, because from his, whatever he extracts from his body, you can identify his blood group, his medication, his whatever, his he is healthy or is not healthy, his life expectation, and so on. And they don't want that information to leak. So, sorry for the holistic approach, but there's like many dimensions of knowing your enemy. So, last area, and I gotta seem to also need to come to an end in this review thingy, is the implants. So the implants in your own infrastructure, in peering points, exchange points, bot networks, but also in your infrastructure that you, as your own country's government, use for lawful interception and monitoring. Because if that infrastructure is pre-owned, then the NSA doesn't even need to build up their own monitoring infrastructure. They just use your capabilities. And also, these implants, of course, have patterns of phoning home. They need to be controlled. They are doing stuff like that are being controlled by this turbulence system. So the whole paradigm of national infrastructure is actually something to rethink, because people think in physical locations and the NSA just totally ignores country borders and stuff like that. They just see technical components they can use, utilize wherever they are, and that's it. So we might have to even redefine what is a national country and what is a government and what is power and so on, because if you're just actually paying the electricity bill for infrastructure that they own, well, then that's not what we want. There is, of course, one very dangerous thought from my point of view, because if we're thinking too military, and that's what these guys sometimes suggest us to do, is to compare, like, for example, bot networks with rockets, like controlling each other, countries' territory, flying over, infiltrating, and so on, because then we find ourselves in military ideas of how to defeat attacks on other countries, and then we come to strong borders and, you know, nationalization of traffic and so on, and that's not what we want. So there is some dangers in the specific ways of looking at these things. So I'm roughly through. I have some more related thoughts which I wanted to give. If you can protect stuff, if you can protect your infrastructure, then avoid putting stuff on it that you don't want to be in the wrong hands. That's pretty simple. It also means that we need to maybe apply and suggest also that companies apply a principle of need to process, so limitation of that data that is required in a process, and not always get the full data set to somewhere where it's just about checking the shipment address or something, where you transfer all the credit records and whatever over there. So if you can't protect data being collected in data retention systems, then don't have them. Forget centralized databases if the centralized databases are maybe pre-owned or easily to access for them. Forget processing more data than required in a process. Forget national intelligence collections, because if you can't protect that, then you're just like supporting foreign power growing without benefit for your own people. And also avoid private collections for marketing or whatever reasons. Next to that, there is some situations that need to be managed that are totally out of control. That's like if your citizens' data are in foreign systems, in Google, Yahoo, in Facebook, or whatever. Question is, what can you do about that? That's more an open question. But it needs to be identified to what extent this is reality. Also, that if your national companies have their data in foreign system at cloud providers, that's got to be identified and taken care of. And of course, also, if you are in a stage of outsourcing all your governmental administrative services to some companies, you might be doomed as well, because you first got to find out who is really running those companies, in which jurisdictions they act, and what they do with the data elsewhere, and so on. So, and then next to that, not so short to-do list, there's the whole range of communication security and operational security, where we could also get the idea maybe we should live in RF-shielded Faraday tents, like these gentlemen tend to do. So this looks maybe like it's somewhere in the desert, but actually these type of tents, they build up in the presidential lounges of hotels, so like they create their own small reality to not get radiation in and out. And this means we get to maybe in the intermediate phase think about how we survive on the way. I think if we realistically see our infrastructure and it's all the way compromised, we need to start with something we can rely on, with separate devices for strong security requirements, where we have verified limited hardware problems, where we have a hardened operating system, where we have strong encryption, and also our own measures to handle it, like fingerprint verifications and so on. So in that type of environment, if you're thinking tails over Tor, everything and so on, that's roughly the right direction. But the moment you start using the web, images, scripts, plugins, forget it, you're dead. You're already taken over through that type of measures. So normal internet usage is like being out in the wild by default. And data processing needs scenarios where there is limitations what all is being failed, and if a single node or if one of the entities processing stuff is being take over, exploited, or whatever. So that's, to be honest, of course, just rough ideas. There's stuff missing, lots of things. Your thoughts and your comments. That was it from my side. Thank you. Okay, we have like 15 minutes or so, right?
Yes, we have lots of time. So, if you have any questions or if you have any ideas and want to talk about what one could do, please line up at the microphones. Also, all ideas and comments are appreciated. And while I give you time to do that, I also want to mention that the talk from Sal 1 is going to be streamed here. So if you want to see that, you can stay here, and there is no need to scramble over for the last seat over there. It's all going to be streamed over here. So, any questions from IRC? Yes, there are. Audio, could you?
Sorry. Yes, there are questions. First one was, did the NSA manage to infiltrate Tor? If yes, to what extent it is still usable against an adversary like the NSA?
By default, Tor is not broken, but there is so many ways to circumvent and to Trojanize and to exploit and control clients that it totally depends on your Tor client's environmental operating systems situation, so to say. And of course, there is possibilities, because you also, in most Tor or in many Tor situations, you also still leak information about the type of system you're using. You might still have stuff like JavaScript enabled, which might make you subject to attacks and other ways. So it also depends if you're providing maybe an additional attack vector, what you do over Tor. So there's not a clear, all a safe situation.
Question from number two, please.
Thank you for the talk. I would like to ask a question. If you are, let's say, you're having a commercial institution or governmental, and you need to use some kind of an infrastructure, but then we can suspect that most of the major hardware vendors are compromised. So what other choices do you have when you need performance?
Okay, to your first part of your question, I have no commercial interest involved in this directly.
Sorry,
but yes, I'm involved in a company called Cryptophone, which tries to do encrypted telephony. I'm involved in Vau Holland Foundation, which tries to support people to support to build up actually secure communication, and also to operate and help projects like WikiLeaks to do what they are meant to be done, and that requires a lot of secure communications. To your second part of the question, indeed, identifying hardware manufacturers or let's say trustworthy hardware components to start with is actually, I think we are roughly at the beginning of that journey, because just today, the series of implants on Cisco, Juniper, Huawei, and so on was released by the Spiegel. And I utterly hope that maybe, for example, Chinese companies will see their chance that the only way out of this is to provide trustworthy open hardware. Because if we don't have that, well, where are we going to end up? Building our luxury security environment on sand, which is not helpful. So, but I don't have a clear advice at this moment what I would myself consider a secure hardware. Maybe I just haven't found it yet.
A question from number one, please.
Well, not a question, but I like the things you showed about Obama and how he uses like all these crazy things, and I think we have to copy their ideas and change them, modify them so that we can use them.
Okay.
In small ways, I don't know. We have to be more aggressive in counter-spying, spying back. Like, I mean, this thing about the embassies, we could have made years ago pictures with infrared cameras. It's just as simple as that.
You're totally right. And actually, I also had some exchange with Duncan Campbell about it. And I actually hope that, because I have this list of the SCS collection points in my wiki, and like five of them I have pictures. So there's a lot more work to do in many countries. And this can be a crowdsourcing thing. We don't need national governments. They're helping us. We just need to get them out of the way for us to do that. You're totally right. We should have done it long ago.
And the funny thing is, the wiki you started, we in our group, in our local group, we started the same things. And we didn't know about many of the other wikis who probably already existed. Just interesting. Yeah.
Well, I'm not sure that was a question, but...
No. There's no question anymore. I'm done.
But I mean, the point is that, I mean, building up your own intelligence agency and replacing NSA by the Galactic Hacker Community's intelligence agency is a neat idea. However, there is one problem, and that Vau Holland said it with a word, that it's slightly difficult to play with those guys making the rules. And that's unfortunately true for part of that thingy still.
you guys should definitely exchange information.
Oh yeah.
Have I seen it correctly? There's another question from IRC. Yes.
Two actually.
Hey. So this is a question from Finland. Starting January 1st, our police gets new legislation that enables them to engage in active network surveillance. Secondly, our government will soon publish a new cybersecurity strategy. In it, they want initiate the signal intelligence operations explicitly in the name for network security and to leverage their position in intelligence, trading with other states. What kind of political and technical message would you have for the Finnish citizens here on video? What things and jargon should we keep an eye on? And what should we demand on our government and politicians? Third, in that sense, a Google data center we have is a SIGINT collection site?
So I'm starting with the last one. Yes, kind of it is, because if Google likes it or not, they are subject to US jurisdiction legislation, and NSA can get anything they want from them. And that doesn't mean that Google does evil, but yes, they do, because they don't encrypt everything in a way that only the users have the keys and so on. Coming to the more serious other questions, indeed, the Swedish, was it Sweden?
Finland,
sorry. The Finnish situation got to be evaluated. I guess it's very important to first understand the cooperation agreements of the national intelligence agencies, because if you don't have them on your side, and that is true in many countries and places, then you have them, then they are not part of the solution, but part of the problem, and then maybe they need to be dissolved, and the guys need to be imprisoned, and they need to be handled as traitors of national interests. So having said that, the other big question is actually what kind of legislation is in place to allow or not allow foreign telecommunication operators to operate in the countries and to really list, identify, that's a lot of research, what countries have what kind of jurisdictional obligations to understand in what kind of network of dependencies you're into. I can't give a fast answer on the Finnish situation. I guess it's a few days of work for quite some people, but that is stuff that can be done locally and should be done locally, because their people know better what they're dealing with. So I hope that this ideas I was giving are like procedures for the Finnish people and for many other people to, you know, do that tasking. That is a lot of work, but it's got to be done country specific anyhow. So it's like there's not one solution fits it all.
Okay. Number 8 has a comment or question. Please go right ahead.
Okay. Well, thank you for your talk, which I found pretty inspiring. But I was surprised to see fingerprint authentication on the list of tips. As far as I know, you can't revoke fingerprints. They are unique. They couldn't get into false hands. Mm-hmm. So could you comment on that, under which circumstances it could be wise, and how to use your fingerprints for authentication?
It is true. However, that fingerprints can be, you know, done, exchanged, and handled, and misused in many ways. However, in former times, we tended to think that encryption is pretty good, and so on. What I have learned through studying the Snowden material is that they have a massive, global, scalable infrastructure for man-in-the-middle games, for crypto circumvention, for playing with our clients, for playing with whatever is in the middle, getting messages from A to B. And without verification of that we are working on the same keys, this is what this is about. And fingerprint verification might be one way, there might be other ways, but that's for like the standard scenario, GPG stuff and so on, or OTR, that's the best we have for the moment. How you do that, sorry, I don't have an answer yet. It might be very inconvenient, like having to do with, you know, traveling and using unsecure communications or doing whatever. There's probably better people than me answering that question.
I think you're doing fine. One last question from IRC, please. Or maybe there are more.
No, for the moment, it's the last one. Is using non-smartphones better in protecting information stored on the phone?
Yes. If you can't install any software and you don't have the capability to run a task or display images that because there's no image viewer, and that when there's no image viewer, it can't be exploited. If there's no scripting language, it cannot be used. If there's no, you know, that's all right. However, SIM Toolkit, as we have seen in the NSA implant selection program, is also a way to play with mobile phones, so that even totally independent from the model of telephone you use, the SIM card might be used to track your location, to send covered SMSs with a phone book entry stored on the SIM and other things. So maybe no telephone is sometimes better than a telephone. But
number two.
One more.
Yeah, picking up the question from Finland. So what would you recommend in general for legislative changes, be it like warranties, liability in software, stuff like that? There are some strong like recommendations on what should be changed on the legal side of regulating technology and use of technology.
Well, actually, you'd be the better person to answer some part of it because you've been more involved in the European legislation of it. But I mean, obviously, stuff like data retention is a huge risk because it collects data that does not have to be collected, and it does not ensure at all that that data does not get in the wrong hands. And there's many other like collection of data which maybe should be generally forbidden in such forums. Because it can be abused too easily. So principles of using and storing as less data as possible and required and decentralizing the infrastructure so there's no central abuse options and so on. But it totally depends on the area, what we're talking about, what's the best solution. I'm just identifying for me, I think this need to process principles, so to limit whatever data you need in a process to really that required and not to always carry around too many data with you through like components that could be compromised. That's, I think, an important part of a policy to be looking at whatever the concrete example is. So, I think my ability to give
one short extension. This was all about data. There's also the security side of it. That means like it's basically dealing with insecurity in the technical world. So there's also something which could be regulated in terms. We have some sort of technical regulations in Germany. Every screw is regulated. So there are recommendations to have the processing of dealing with insecurities and dealing with vulnerabilities. Are there like recommendations how to deal with it in like the legislation?
Yes, I think we're coming to that because as we have learned through the material, most default firewall, like commercial firewall, and so-called security mechanisms must be considered more part of the problem than part of the solution because they provide the illusion that you could protect an environment where a lot of high valuable target data is there. And that illusion of security is a lot more danger than there's no fucking way we can protect if we are online. So to simplify it a little bit. But I don't really have the set of policy, I think we need to write that actually, to write the guidelines on how to secure, how to provide security under these circumstances. But actually, I think we are still in this status of identifying the size of the problem. We are not there yet in all areas to really say that is the solution.
To some discussions we had over the last days with a couple of those, Ruth was all about like doing insecurity much, much more expensive than security.
Sure.
And I think it's the right way to go.
Sure, raise the cost, but if people think that exploiting millions of clients is raising a lot of cost, they are wrong. So first we need to, I mean, right now the exploitation infrastructure is massive, it's scalable, it doesn't cost a cent for them to do it. It's just too easy. And to raise the cost is quite, I totally agree with you on the goal, but we need to identify how to get there. We're not there yet, I think, or only very rough.
Okay, two more quick questions. Number one,
oh,
please.
Oh gosh, even more.
Yeah, in this context, I see that most of the problem, it's related also to the concentration of power that the US gained through all the NSA activities. In this context, the question is, shouldn't the national security authorities, especially law enforcement agencies, mm-hmm. or even the national intelligence agencies, do something to protect their own citizens in their own countries?
Well, yes, that's the theory of their job description. However, the problem is that, I mean, I had this discussion with a member of a German parliament. He asked, you know, should we dissolve the intelligence agencies or should we give them a lot more money so that they can do their job independently from the big brother? And actually, before I find myself on the role of advising someone from a parliament to get a lot more money to the intelligence, I want to sleep some nights and think about it.
Just to comment on this, using national intelligence to protect against foreign intelligence by empowering the national one is probably wrong. But when we was discussing today with Fukami about the fact that some law enforcement authorities are very upset about all this hype about mm-hmm. the intelligence because they are doing an activity that is heavily regulated while the intelligence can do whatever they want. So there could be some conflict of the interest in having the law enforcement agencies going against foreign intelligence powers.
You are totally right, but unfortunately that type of conflict often ends if the law enforcement guys get whatever they want. Okay, like bulk access to all data, Trojans, you know, data, whatever they want. They are kind of jealous on the intelligence guys. That is true. But I'm not sure if that is part of the problem-solving process to make them satisfy with their requirements. I mean, maybe it is in to some extent, but not to the extent that they get whatever they want. I mean, that can't be it.
So it turns out we're actually out of time. I'm sorry, but maybe I could ask you to come down and... quick question. Go ahead. Sure.
The CEO of StoneSoft company, Mr. Jarno Limnell, is referred to as cybersecurity general in Finland. Mm-hmm. And I think the politicians look up to him as some kind of authority. And there's this kind of commercial connection in this.
To be honest, I didn't really understand the question.
But could you repeat the question?
Is it a problem that the cybersecurity general is a CEO of a commercial company which is not anymore Finnish, but it's sold to some foreign other company?
Well, let's say it like this. I mean, the militarization of cyberspace is obviously there, if we like it or not. And it is there for quite some time. If you look at Israel companies, you will literally find no technology companies where the guys have not been attached to the Israel Army Service and so on, as they all have to go there. And if they're good with technology, they end up in those departments. So, and we can like it or not like it. If you look at France, companies like Vupin selling exploits is also run by, you know, former people of the governmental environment. Of course, they have now only a private, beautiful life. Selling weapons to attack all of us. I mean, cyber peace is a good idea and we need to establish principles for that, and I hopefully pointed out that I don't like military thinking in these ideas, because military thinking is, you know, you end up at best in this Italian triangle where different people hold big guns to each other's head and then they call that peace. And relatively, it's a stable situation, like, oh, whew, that's not where I want to end up, so. We got to find our own ways without those type of people coming from those type of environments, I think, so. But I think that's good enough for today.
Thank you, Andy, thank you.